Welcome to Night's Ashes. I'm Mike.
And I'm Nate. What are we smoking today, Mike?
So today, we are smoking the Rico Barato Torpedo Maduro.
And boy, are we excited.
Oh, I am. I actually think it's going to be better if our theory holds true.
It almost has to be. Yeah.
Well, I've always said that Maduros are like the dark roast coffee of the world. You can kind of put cheap product and make it better. Cover it up a little.
Yeah, cheap product all you want, but the cap did not taste very pleasant when I wet it before cutting.
First impression, I do get a slight acetone, yeah. But it's not as bad. I do get that lower molasses-like note in there. It's very faint, but it's there.
Yeah, I'm not overly thrilled, but we will see. We will see. I've got a concern, Mike.
Oh, what's that?
My concern is that Tony Danza has kind of fallen from the public view and the cultural eye, so that there's going to be a whole generation now of people that can listen to Elton John's Tiny Dancer and not substitute Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza.
That is a travesty. I agree.
I think it is, yeah.
I only know him from one show, to be honest with you, so I'm going to learn today, I'm going to guess.
You won't. We always watched him in the garbage-picking, field-goal-kicking Philadelphia phenomenon, which is a, surprisingly enough, it's a Disney movie, but it's one of, they experimented with this stuff in the 90s, I think, where they did kind of like 60-minute movies, and they put them out, and I didn't get this thing. There was a person online that was offering a widescreen version of the film, and it was truly a widescreen version, but they cut these to full frame for their Disney TV program, but they filmed it in widescreen, so I have a widescreen copy of it. It's still standard definition, but it's well worth it. He plays a garbage man who has a busted truck, so he taped up the lever that makes the truck compact the trash, and instead of pushing it, he has to kick it. And surprise, surprise, he's a garbage man in Philadelphia, and the Philadelphia Eagles just happen to need a new field goal kicker. So that's the movie there. But I showed it to my wife, and she actually enjoyed it more than she thought she would. So there is that.
It sounds like a pretty standard plot line for a Disney Renaissance movie from our childhood.
Yeah. You know, it's got all the good jokes. It's got the crazy kind of like dad of him that doesn't like what he does. So
got to.
You know.
I got to.
What do you do? It's the 90s, man. You have to do it. What are you pairing with your cigar, Mike?
So I have the standard water as always. And then I'm trying for the first time the Summit Nihilus Irish Red non-alcoholic beer.
Ah.
Which so far is not as good as the Guinness non-alcoholic.
Okay.
And then I have a Spotted Cow as a backup.
Nice. I remember when you were doing a challenge and you seemed to enjoy the Heine 00.
I do like the Heine 00. I like the Heine 00 and I like the Guinness non-alcoholic. I think those are my two favorite.
Yeah, I like the alcoholic ones myself, but
I still dabble in the non-alcoholic beers. I have a couple friends who don't drink at all, so I like to have them at the bar just in case I get guests. So
yeah, that makes sense. If I'm not drinking, I'd rather drink something else, you know, like a soda or what have you. That's something that reminds me of beer, but it's not going to give me the same kind of buzz or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of like I wouldn't smoke a non-nicotine cigar.
No, I wouldn't smoke a non-nicotine cigar either, even though I like hookah, so
yeah,
maybe.
I thought hookah had nicotine in it, though.
It does, but not in a very high content if you prepare it correctly. Oh, you're not supposed to burn it. You're only supposed to heat it enough to get the sugar to turn into like
vapor. I went to a hookah bar once, and I quite liked it, but who's to say? The whole thing seems like just dangerous enough that I shouldn't have one in my house, you know?
Oh, dude. In one of my apartments, we got evicted because my roommate dropped a hookah coal on the floor and it burned through the wood floor and into the subfloor.
That'll do it.
That'll do it.
He didn't do the old toothpaste trick to fill a hole?
I guess not. I wasn't there when we got evicted.
Get some wood filler.
I would have just covered it with a carpet before the inspection, but...
Well, yeah.
I wasn't there.
Yeah.
I was working on the road.
Yep.
But...
On the road again.
So what are we going to talk about today, Nate?
Well, we're going to talk about ratings, man. Ratings. And not in the early aughts of the ratings of desperate women on hotornot.com, but I wanted to start with cigar ratings. Cigar aficionado, they're like the one you go to for cigar ratings, or that's what they would like people to believe. Or maybe it's a giant cigar conspiracy. Only time will tell. Do you know much about ratings and how Cigar Aficionado rates things and why?
I've been exposed to it for at least 18, 19 years, something like that. So I am aware of the cigar ratings. I'm also aware that we've smoked several highly rated cigars and not liked them. So yes. I would be interested to hear what you're going to expose about the Cigar Aficionado Rating Board Committee.
Yeah. So I don't know that I'm going to expose a whole lot because it's not overly open. And a lot of the stuff that I was able to find actually is from like the Cigar Aficionado's disclosures and stuff about their cigar ratings. So they're not necessarily trying to hide anything. But there are some things I wasn't able to find out, which might be more telling than the stuff that I was able to find out.
I would like to take a break here to talk about the cigar. I am okay. About an inch in, and I see no physical defects on the cigar at all.
You
and
see
it's
no
still
what?
Lit, and I'm getting pinholing. And as I try to get smoke out, it's very difficult to come out, like almost nothing. So we like to say when we have technical difficulties, and I am definitely having difficulties.
Okay.
So just so everybody's aware that, yeah, I'm having like a serious problem. I might have to cut the end of the cigar off and relight it. We'll see. We'll see. Oh, I'll okay. Let you know.
I feel like this one has better airflow than the Connecticut did, the Torpedo Connecticut, but it tastes terrible, in my opinion, at this stage. But it's interesting because these are likely from the same box, kept in separate humidors, as most of our cigars are. I didn't have any issues with the lighting, but with the Connecticut, I did have some of the filler that was sticking beyond where the cut was, you know, for the end of it. So maybe these aren't manufactured to the same excruciating details as other cigars, I suppose.
I would say definitely not. It's like cherry hot for the last half inch of the cigar, and I'm barely getting any smoke through.
Yeah.
So just well, like I say, it's worth mentioning.
Yeah. I get will your little penny nail out or whatever and poke some holes, man, and go to town on that thing.
Yep. I'll get it fixed. Don't worry. But I just want everybody to know.
I'm not worried unless you'd make me smoke this thing on my own because I don't like it.
I wouldn't like say it. If I did. I'd just grab a better cigar.
You would let me know at the end. So. yes, my Siri R is fantastic. I mean, my what the fuck are we smoking? So let's kind of go over how Cigar Aficionado assigns ratings to a cigar. They have what they would consider a very strenuous system all laid out here that makes perfect sense for everybody. So they have appearance and construction, and they rate these cigars on a total of 100 points. So 15 of the possible 100 are based on appearance and construction. So visually, a premium cigar should have a smooth, flawless wrapper and be consistent in color and shape. When held, it should feel firm and give off a slightly oily moistness. And there are some people that don't like the word moist. It's like a audio trigger for them. So I'm going to say it again, moist. Points are deducted if the wrapper has areas of large veins or if the cigar feels dry or firmer in some parts than others. So my guess is they don't rate a whole lot of cheroos.
Yeah. The veins thing doesn't bother me. The other stuff does make sense, though, to an extent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of it makes sense. I don't know. Like, I don't know that I've ever grabbed a cigar and said, ooh, there's a slightly oily moistness about this. I don't know, man. But I don't care about the veins or like if I can clearly see that it was a leaf that wrapped it. I mean, it's wrapped by a leaf. So I don't know what you want me to say about that. So anyway, appearance and construction, that's only 15 of the possible points. So that's the least amount of possible points per category because there's four categories. So they only award 15 points for this. So it's not weighted heavily towards if it does or doesn't have veins. if that makes sense. The next category is flavor, which is 25 of the possible 100 points. So it says, although each premium cigar has a distinctive taste, all premium cigars should taste smooth and rich. If a cigar leaves a bitter or harsh taste on your lip or tongue or mouth, points are deducted.
Yeah.
Which makes sense to me, but I feel like they put more thought into the visual category than they did in the flavor category. So what? It's supposed to be smooth and rich and not bitter. Well, that's a lot of cigars, I guess. All right. The next one is smoking characteristics. And this is another 25 out of a possible 100 points. A perfectly made and stored premium cigar should light and burn easily and evenly. The draw should be comfortable and the same throughout the cigar. The smoke should be cool in your mouth. Points are deducted if the cigar burns too quickly, if it burns faster on one side, and if you have to pull hard to get a mouthful of smoke, or if that smoke is unpleasantly hot.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it all makes sense. And then overall impression. 35 of the possible 100 points. I'm going to read to you the description of overall impression, and then I'm going to tear it a new one. This is the most heavily weighted category because it is the most important. End of description of category. So the most subjective of the four categories is the most important, but they won't tell you what that means or how that works. Just overall impression.
Sure. That makes sense. Ha ha ha.
Well, I mean, you know, like every... So the one thing is cigars are very subjective. You know, whiskeys and bourbons and cognacs and whatever the fuck else are very subjective. Like taste is a very subjective thing. So I get it. But is that more important than the flavor thing?
I don't think so. When we rate them, it's based solely on flavor. So
yeah,
it's what it is.
Well, yeah, it is what it is. And I mean, I think it's almost getting into kind of like the wine connoisseur category or whatever, where, you know, you have to like swirl the glass and put a little bit in your mouth and swish it around and do whatever you do with all the wine tasting stuff. But at the end of the day, does it taste good or does it taste like ass? Like, is it worth the $2, the $5, the $50, whatever you're spending on the cigar? Is it worth it? And taste is super subjective, and we try and, you know, and we point out, like, I don't know, I guess the nice ashes rating system would be, you know, does it taste good and non-offensive? It will tell you, too, if it's a good taste and non-offensive, but it's not to our taste likings. You know, we're like, ah, it's kind of out of our wheelhouse, but I can't say anything bad about it. There's nothing I can really say bad about it. It was a well-made cigar, and it tasted fine. It's not one that I'm drawn to because it's not, you know, not the style of cigar I normally smoke or would choose to smoke, but I can't knock it because it's not something I would like. You know what I mean?
Yep. Now, Nate, I just sent you two pictures.
Okay.
So that's what happened to my cigar. I had a pinhole that burned all the way through.
Holy
the
fuck,
outside
dude.
Of the cigar. That is the first time I've ever had that happen.
I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
Yes. So I don't know if you want to upload those to the Instagram.
Oh, they will be on the Instagram.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So 100%. That's how much I had to cut off, and the scraping on the cigars because my cutter is not quite large gauge enough to go around the cigar. So it's not.
Holy
the
shit.
Cigar leaf itself was damaged by my cutter, but it wasn't the cigar's fault. So.
Yeah, full you disclaimer. Had to cut off a good, like, a full inch, maybe more.
I would say inch and a half, maybe inch and three quarters, yeah.
Yeah. Because
that pinhole came right through, and it was, I mean, obviously on fire, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've never fucking seen that happen.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, that is, yeah, I know what my score is going to be already.
But, I have a feeling as well.
Yeah, needless to say, I am a third or two-thirds of the way through my cigar, and I have not relit it yet.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to keep kind of going through some of these cigar rating things. Cigar ratings and reviews became popular in the 90s, and it was the Wine Spectator magazine publisher Marvin Shankton wanted to create a similar rating system for premium handmade cigars. And so Cigar Aficionado is considered today to be the leading cigar publication, an advocate of the cigar good life, whatever the fuck that is. And, you know, they want to build themselves as kind of the principal source of cigar knowledge for everyone who smokes cigars everywhere. So they do a blind taste testing. We're going to talk about their blind taste testing a little bit later. But here's what happens. This is how it goes. And so they've got a panel of graders that rate these cigars. And Then there's a lot of kind of backlash on the internet or counterpoints on the internet that say you shouldn't rely on ratings, you shouldn't rely on Cigar Aficionado, they're the devil, and all that stuff. And we'll get into that stuff a little bit later. But this is from another publication, Cigar Country. And they're trying to get you to not believe the ratings so much. They're saying that they believe the rating systems have done wonders for the industry and the quality of cigars being made, and they're a good guide for consumers. But they want to caution smokers to not go based solely on the ratings. I mean, it's the same thing with almost anything, and we're going to get into other ratings a little bit later.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the ratings, especially when I go and get wine, I don't know anything about wine. My wife likes wine. So if I'm going to buy her a bottle of wine as a gift, I'm going to look at the bottle with a 91 rating and be like, all right, well, this is probably going to be appreciated. Like, I really don't care what it tastes like. It's wine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wine. Then there's a lot of funny instances in the wine world, and I'm sure in anything where taste is part of the rating, so cigars and food and restaurants and whatever else, where they've done, you know, $100 and $1,000 bottles of wine up against a box wine, and seemingly consistently the box wine performs just as good, if not better, than the other more expensive ones, which is almost kind of the point of the show, of our show, right? Is we're trying to keep the cigars within a certain price point. Are they worth that or are they not? Not saying, you know, like every cigar that's been over our price range has been good, I think, right, Mike? For the most part?
Yeah, I would say
at least 90% of them have been good. So if you get to a certain price point in cigars, it's probably similar to a certain price point in wine or whiskey or scotch or I don't know, Pavlova or whatever else you like to eat and consume, right? But here's why they don't want you to depend on ratings. The Cigar Aficionado Tasting Panel members, they smoke 6 to 12 cigars a day. So what that means is that only the full-bodied cigars will reach the top ratings, because if you're smoking that many cigars a day, you won't appreciate the subtleness of a mild or medium-bodied smoke. So you have to be like, it's one of those things where like the more powerful or the more full or strong cigar is more memorable than the other ones, because it's the same reason why we try to smoke the lighter cigars first, because we record usually 2 episodes a night recording wise, right? We usually try to smoke the lighter ones first, because we don't want to smoke the heavier ones first to have them overpower the next cigar. So we try and do that in order to benefit the taste buds.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll even split up series to make sure that we smoke a light cigar first and then a heavy cigar, or what appears to be light and heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. We try and do our best to not stack the deck against lighter bodied cigars. The next point they make is that the tasting panelists rarely smoke a cigar in its entirety. So if they have to rate hundreds of cigars, they don't have time to smoke all of them. So they spoke with a legendary panelist who told them, "I rarely smoke more than a quarter inch of a cigar." So I don't know how you could even rate a cigar based on a quarter inch.
Dude, that is fucking pathetic. That's worthless.
That's how many times have we had a phenomenal cigar that went totally to shit the last like 2 inches? How many times has the first like inch been god awful, but the rest of the thing was fantastic?
It's pretty common. I mean, that's normal.
It's more common than one would believe.
Yeah.
And how many of those really phenomenal ones that have the taste changes at a third and two thirds? Like the really phenomenal ones, you would never get any of those complexities and things if you only smoke a quarter inch of it.
Yeah, I agree. And even the cheaper ones that have that flavor change, that they become really good. Yeah, they don't start off necessarily the best, but they'll finish strong. Yeah. So yeah, that's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't, you know, and I guess that's one legendary panelist's opinion, but just because that panelist didn't smoke more than a quarter inch doesn't necessarily mean the other panelists do or don't. But again, I mean, that's kind of, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Like, okay, so why was that one that we hated rated so high? Well, if you only smoke a quarter inch of it, it's probably not that bad, right?
Right. Yeah, and I saw that in a cigar lounge not that long ago.
Okay.
I was like, ew. And they had the 91 right next to it.
Like, of course they did. Yeah, of course they did. All right. The third point this publication makes, Cigar Country, says that some industry insiders consider that cigar ratings are influenced by advertising. So most publications will defend their non-biased rating system and values. There's not a whole lot of proof of the non-discriminatory selection of cigars that make it into the hands of panelists. And they want to say, like, hey, don't take that to mean that the rating systems are unreliable, but you have to know that, well, there's next bit I'm adding, but you have to know that there are certain cigars that will make it into the hands of panelists. The panelists themselves won't know what the cigar is, which we'll talk about in just a minute here, but there are only certain cigars that make it to be rated by Cigar Aficionado. It's not like, oh, just send us your cigars, we'll rate them all. Like, that's not how that works.
Yeah, they're never going to rate a Kentucky Cheroux because it will never be sent to them, or a Bandito or something.
Yeah. Well, you can see the fucking veins, bro. Get that away from me. I heard one of the best insults ever. Well, I don't know if that's really an insult, but it's depending on your generation, it could be a burn. Where somebody was like, oh, you're the kind of person that eats the Snickers upside down so you can feel the veins on your tongue.
Oh, my God. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
So take that for what it is. But apparently, so there's been some talk online, like on Reddit and stuff, where some people really hate Cigar Aficionado and their ratings. And apparently, and I don't have necessarily any proof other than some Reddit posts where Cigar Aficionado has blacklisted certain cigar makers like DTT, aka Steve Saka, who, according to the Reddit post, arguably puts out some of the best cigars you can smoke. But you can find these cigars online. You can find them on their own website and stuff. But apparently, Cigar Aficionado doesn't want anything to do with them. I don't know why.
It doesn't really matter why.
It doesn't really matter why. And some of this stuff is like, if you're a cigar snob, you would be like, oh, okay, the Max story on the DTT thing. Here we go. But I don't know, and I don't really care. The part I care about is if they're refusing to review cigars that they don't like or they don't think they like, or, you know, I mean, that kind of shows that they're not unbiased.
Right. The bottom line is that the cigars they're getting are curated beforehand. So
yeah, and I suppose given the number of cigars out there, right, they should curate a bit, I suppose, but
they probably have to.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's how Cigar Aficionado does their stuff. They get the cigars in, and the cigars, they remove the bands, and they're coated, and they're presented to the panel without any identifying information. So they're just given a code. They take the bands off. They do the four-point thing, and each panel member smokes and scores cigars individually. The price of the cigar is not factored into the rating until after the testing is finished. So I guess what that means that the panel doesn't know the price, but then they might adjust the score afterwards based on price. I mean, that's what it sounds like to me.
That's what it sounds like to me also.
So I guess take that for what it's worth as well. But they do the blind taste testing, which I guess is, you know, I mean, that's a good part where how you would do any kind of blind taste test. You know, you don't know what you're smoking and then you rate it. I've done that with beer and I've done that with peanut butter. But and then Cigar Aficionado hasn't rated every single cigar, but they've rated, thousands of cigars. Because I know we've looked up cigars we've smoked on the show and we're like, oh, I wonder what this one is. But surprise, surprise, Cigar Aficionado has not rated it. So
no, they're not going to rate a lot of the cigars that we try. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah. And that's why we're here and why we have a podcast.
That's right. We're niche. We're in a niche to ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. We generally don't really comment on construction of these things. I mean, every once in a while we're like, oh, this is like really super firm. Like this is firmer than any other cigar I've held. Or like, oh, look at, you know, if we smoke like a barber pole, we're like, oh my God. Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. We note it if it's exceptional in either direction, but yeah, for the most part, yeah, I don't care what they look like.
Yeah, it's got to taste good.
Yeah, does it taste good? Was it cheap, relatively speaking, yes, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of like it for the Cigar Aficionado stuff. Do you have any?
I don't have any information, but I know that, I mean, the first time I read Cigar Aficionado magazine, I was 18. So
yeah,
I'm very aware of what it is.
I've never read one. I have one to read, and it's, I don't know, probably by the time this episode comes out, it'll be like 2, maybe 3 months ago, but they did an interview with Josh Brolin. So I got that copy of that one, and I haven't cracked into it yet, but that'll be the first one I've read.
I had a copy years ago that I kept, and they had an interview with like Jesse Ventura or some Minnesota political figure. But other than that, I just read them if I'm at the lounge or something like that, or if an article pops up.
Yeah. I know they do kind of like any magazine subscription, right? Don't pay full price for it. They run specials and discounts all the time. I don't know that it's worthwhile to read or subscribe to. I bought my copy of it off of eBay for like $3 because I think the list price is over $10 for one copy.
Right. That's for cigar lounges to get a subscription to, not for consumers,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so in 2023, Cigar Aficionado rated 621 cigars. And of those 621, how many do you think scored at least 90 points, Mike?
10%.
122 of them.
Wow.
That's like what, roughly 20%?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
So they're not smoking shit, probably.
No, they're not smoking bad cigars. They're all good.
But, well, not the Underground Shade, but
yeah. Why don't they spread that out more over the year? That's my question. If you're doing 600 cigars, you could do two a day.
Well, that was, so that was 2023. And in 2022, they only rated 251 cigars.
Crazy. You think that they could, obviously rating cigars is not a full-time job, but you would think that their staff writers could have the year to do it.
Well, I don't know that it's the staff writers. It's a panel of blind
people. Oh, sure. They're taste testers or whatever you want to call it.
Not blind people, but But maybe they hired more taste testers for 2023. I don't know. Maybe they needed to beef those numbers up or something. So
I am officially done with my cigar because I had to cut a third of it out.
Yeah. Holy fucking shit, dude. Well, it's not great. I think finally I'm to the halfway point, but I wanted to talk, and it's up to you, Mike, if you want to like pop a shrew or something.
Yeah, I'll grab a shrew or something similar.
Yeah, I wish I could, but journalistic integrity or something.
My experience has been documented, and
yes. So how do you, Alexa? How do you create a pinhole in your cigar to not have to smoke the whole thing? Oh, did I say that out loud? I'm sorry.
Yes. So,
but I want to talk a little bit about ratings, but I'll give Mike a minute here to go grab something.
Thank you. All right. I am back.
What'd you end up grabbing, Mike?
I grabbed just a random Bandito shrew that I had.
Nice. So I wanted to talk about some of the ratings, just ratings in general, not necessarily having anything to do with cigars, but almost everything we do nowadays, whether it's an experience or a product we buy or a place we stay or a recipe we try and make, like all of these things have ratings attached to them.
Yes, they do. And it's becoming more and more unreliable due to corporate interference in the rating systems, trying to rig things in their favor.
Yeah. And even jobs that you apply to, like the companies have a rating based on supposedly employees or ex-employees. Any resume you submit gets run through an applicant tracking system that uses AI to rate your resume and give your resume a score. And your score on your resume, and I know this because I found a service online that has a one-time fee for the year, and it will leverage AI to help you rewrite bits of your resume or your whole thing, put it in a template, and you can copy paste the job you're applying for into a box, and it will give you the applicant tracking system rating. But it tells you you want to be somewhere between like 70 and 80. You don't want to be so high because anything above, I think like 90 is suspicious, which is interesting because a lot of people want the 5-star review, right, of their product, of their thing, of their service. You want the full 5 stars. I saw one where it was somebody was doing a Google review of a doctor, and they were like, oh yeah, Dr. So-and-so saved my life with the procedure and everything. And the doctor commented back like, honestly, I don't know what to do to earn that 5th star because they only gave him 4 out of 5 stars for saving their life.
Yeah, it's crazy sometimes.
I mean, and that might just be a made up one, but it's still indicative of kind of the rating system, right? And you get all of these things with the movies where the movie experts rate something like Madam Web a 10 out of 10, and the audience is like, it's a 2 out of 10 at the best.
Oh, yeah. when it comes to movies, a professional reviewer would say, oh, it's a 9.9 out of 10 and it has great diversity. It's like, well, most audiences are looking for entertainment, not...
Well, they're looking for story, character development, like all of the things that make a good movie, not are there 27 different races depicted in this film?
It's not a bad thing necessarily, but if you're making...
No,
a,
I'm not saying that, but when they, saga, when they write movies based on that, yeah.
You know...
I don't care what they tell you in school. Vikings were black.
So was Anne Boleyn, from what I hear.
And Anne Frank.
Especially Anne Frank.
Anyway, so apparently, according to statistics, 91% of people will regularly or occasionally read online reviews, which is not surprising. I mean, you'd have to kind of, to some extent, you kind of have to be a little bit silly to not read any online reviews of things. I mean, I've never bought the ShamWow, but there weren't really any reviews of the ShamWow online in the 90s, so didn't know if it was good or not.
I read a ton of reviews, and I like to look at the 1 stars and the 2 stars first. Because if you have a product that has an extreme number of 1-star reviews, they a lot of times are not about the product itself. It's about a seller to avoid or something of that nature.
Yeah, some customer service thing, or I like the ones that are like, well, mine didn't work when it showed up, and I emailed them, and they said, you gotta put the batteries in, and I didn't say anywhere I had to put batteries in this thing to turn it on, and I don't understand.
I love that one. Oh, I have to provide my own AA batteries for this remote control? How dare they? It's like,
should have been the first thing disclosed to me as a buyer.
Yeah.
So we got 91% of people that read reviews. 84% will trust them as much as a personal recommendation. So there are people out there that trust them and believe them. And by saying that there are people out there, chances are you're one of them, whoever you are. We're going to go into, and I feel like you and I might differ here, Mike, but I'm not the kind of person that generally writes customer reviews.
I have in the past, if it's exceptional or, something has to be exceptional one way or the other for me to write a review. Let's put it that way. I'm not going to write like one of the crazy reviews I read. Oh, these Levi 527s are terrible work pants. It's like, well, dude, they're not work pants, so yeah, they're not, obviously.
Yeah, these all nylon crazy colored pants I bought are not good welding pants. How dare they?
Right.
So I don't usually write reviews because if it's something that's good, I'd rather just word of mouth it to people if they ask me, but I'm not a salesperson and I don't have that personality, so... Unless somebody comes to me and says, hey, I'm trying to solve this issue, this and that, and I'll say, oh, well, I had a similar issue, and what I use is this, but, you know, there's a lot of other things out there that are equally as good. You know, a lot of the stuff out there is a lot like cigars, where it's kind of like the thing that I chose, I know why I chose the thing I chose, but the reasons why I chose the thing I chose might be completely different than why you're trying to choose what you're trying to choose. So I'm not going to sell you on the thing that I chose. One, because they're not paying me. And two, because that would be disingenuous on my part.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of like getting asked what kind of power tools you recommend or something. It's like,
yeah,
you choose for yourself.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the chances are if you're interested in something that I have myself personally, I know almost equally as much about the thing you're thinking about getting because I read all the reviews and did all the spec review, comparisons between the product you're looking at and the product I ultimately chose. And I can tell you why I chose what I ultimately chose, but that doesn't mean the one that I didn't choose isn't good. It's just it didn't have something I was specifically looking for. So, right. Okay, well, let's talk about this before we get into some of the other stuff. So my wife has introduced a concept called glow baths to our kids, where she gets the glow sticks where you snap them and they glow and you make bracelets out of them and stuff. But you toss them in the bathtub and then, ooh, the bath is glowing, right? And you get the bubble bath going. You got glowing bubbles in the bathtub for the kids.
Sure. Never heard of it, but it makes sense.
For adults. Yeah, whatever. And, well, of course, guess what? The kids want them all the time because it's fun. And then, you know, my wife is like, well, I can't just, like, that's an awful lot of glow sticks to be buying if you do a glow bath every single time you do a bath.
Yeah, you right? and I like understand that, but.
Well, a child does not. So what I did was look online, and lo and behold, with the advent of LED technology, they have submersible LED lights that are rechargeable that you can toss in a bath, a hot tub, pool, a swimming pool, whatever. And I'm like, sweet, I'm like $8 to $13 is the range of these things. I'll just buy one of those. They can have a glow bath every time. It's rechargeable. Who cares? Yeah, have a glow bath every single bath. I'm not dropping whatever it is for a pack of the glow sticks. And they'll change colors. They'll, you know, cycle through the colors. They can do a solid color. You can adjust the brightness. Like, it makes sense. But I was reading all these reviews on all these different, like, submersible, like, LED pucks. And some of them were like, oh, well, you know, like, it started leaking and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, well, did you put it, like, in the deep end of your pool? Was it in a bathtub? Was it in a pot of water? How deep was it? What did you do to it? Did you just chuck it in there? And then there were some that were like, oh, yeah, this chopstick set was really great. But somehow it was linked under this product. You know how they do that sometimes? They'll keep the reviews of a previous product, but then change the product and the title and stuff. And so they get all the old, like, really good reviews, but it's a totally different product. So you read these reviews, and it's like somebody talking about something that isn't even listed in the description. And you're like, what in the fuck is going on here? So the review market is rife for manipulation.
For sure. You got to be careful.
Yeah, you got to be careful. And I think a safe thing to say is if you're trying to read reviews on a product and you're seeing more than one review talking about a product that isn't listed in the thing you're looking at, maybe just don't go with that company.
Oh, yeah. And Amazon now is kind of similar to eBay, where if the seller is all no vowels, right? All it's like some word you can't pronounce because it's not really a word and it's shipping directly from wherever. It's like, well, and some of them are legit and others are not.
Yes. I mean, you know, there's a huge, huge skill of personal discretion with these reviews. And I can't find it now, but there was one where there was an article where I was trying to, and I didn't read it because it kind of like made me gag a little bit, but it was like, when reading reviews, those people who will not look at a product that has 100% five-star reviews, but, you know, 20,000 reviews, but a 4.5, they're losing out because, and like I threw up in my mouth a little bit because I know it was like Jeff Bezos' assistant being tasked with writing this. Like, you should only buy five-star reviewed items because that's where our profit margin is as Amazon. But I don't know if you're the same way, Mike. If I see a product and it's the average review is 5 stars over like 200 reviews, it's a pass. Like, I'm not going to buy that thing. If it's a 4.5 and it's 20,000 reviews, I'll likely buy that thing.
You definitely have to weigh how many there are. And when you have, let's say you do have 200 five-star reviews, you need to read. You need to spend 10 minutes, especially if it costs money. Like, what are these reviews? Because some of those products, like the 20,000 one, how many of those are computer generated, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
You know what I mean? And then there's good products that are reliable that have a quarter of them are 1-star reviews. And you really have to read those too, because a lot of times it'll be people that don't understand what it's for, or they're not talking about the product itself. It's like, oh, I bought it from this unknown seller that's a scammer. And it's like, well, that doesn't reflect on whatever you're buying. Good information that I want to know, but not for the product necessarily.
What I love is it's hopefully some boomer somewhere, right? And they've rated the thing a 1-star. And you read the review, and the review is like, this is the best product ever. It changed my life. I love this. But they rated it a 1 because they don't understand the fucking star rating system. They think like 1 is the best. Or something.
It could have been a mistake. It happens.
Well, I mean, it could have been a mistake, but you see some all I see in my brain is like some grandma, and they're like, ooh, 1-star. 1's got to be the best. 1, I love this pasta strainer. It strains all my pasta, and nothing sticks to it, and it's easy to clean, and my grandchildren are happy. I love it. Click, 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 click. Like, they don't understand the rating system. So, you know, but that's why you have to read them, and luckily you can filter them and I don't know, people have a love-hate with AI, but Amazon has now, and this isn't supposed to be like an Amazon episode, but Amazon has obviously tried to manipulate or monetize or benefit from the ratings. So they've introduced an AI summarization of the ratings where they'll kind of give you the highlights of all of the ratings, where it's like, oh, customers praise this, that, and the other aspect of this product, but they're mixed on like the battery life. And there are some negative ones on that. And so I always try and like double check the AI because I know AI can be prone to hallucinating where it'll tell you what it thinks you want to hear sometimes. And there's a lawyer busted for that where he was using AI to find court cases to support his cases, but it was hallucinating and just kind of fake, you know, creating cases out of thin air to support what he wanted. Based on how he was prompting it, and the judge was not happy, let's tell you that.
Yeah, you got to be careful with that. Like, you can generate lists with AI, but you got to check the deets, because they are not accurate usually.
Yeah, I mean, so AI is great for a lot of things, and it's not so good for other things. So if you wanted to, like, summarize an article, it's pretty good. If you wanted to, like, generate some funny names or things or whatever, it's good at that too. It's good for kind of like a launching pad for things. It's not so much great at, I need to write a research paper to prove that transmaxing will positively influence my life over the next 15 years. Because it's likely going to just pull in some things based on your prompt to achieve what it thinks you wanted to tell you, kind of thing. So it's almost like a toddler. Did you hit your sibling? No. Why are they holding their ear and crying then? You got to do your due diligence. All right. So a lot of people will write reviews based on personal experience of the product, characteristics, value for the money, customer service, customer care. That's kind of a big one. You know, a lot of the negative reviews on Amazon or a lot of other sites are the box arrived squished, or it was defective out of the box, but the company refunded it or replaced it right away, and I'm good to go. So it's like, well, shouldn't that be a higher rating then? Because, I mean, what's the quality control on all these products? I mean, how many of these products ship out every day? Like, what's the, what do they call it, breakage? I mean, it's not truly breakage anymore, but, you know, what's the ratio of failure off right. the line?
Right. I recently ordered air filters for my wife's car, and I got it, and it was an air filter for not her car. And I returned it for free. And I got the right air filter, and it wasn't a problem. I did not leave a bad review because I was sent the wrong air filter. I just kind of...
Well, why would you?
Yeah. Responded like, hey, I don't know what this is for, but it's not the car that I have.
Yes.
So I get a kick out of the reviews where they, like, light switches and stuff like that. Smart switches and all these devices, and people try to wire them in, and they don't turn on. And then it's like they blame the product. It's like, you didn't wire it correctly.
Yeah.
I bet.
Well, there's so many of those ones where it's like the reviews and you read it and you're like, this is not a product you should ever have bought for yourself because you are clearly not able to use it.
Right. Don't buy a three-way switch if you don't know what it is and how to connect it. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Don't buy the three-way switch just because you get excited that it has three-way in the description.
Yeah, yeah. It says line side of three-way. If you don't know what that means, don't buy it.
Yes. don't do it. It's the same with like computer parts and stuff too, you know, like, oh yeah, you want the big whatever. Well, if it doesn't fit in your motherboard, don't buy it. Like it says right there what motherboard slot it needs. If you don't know what that is, you shouldn't be buying it. Go to Best Buy Geek Squad and have them build you a virus-laden computer. You know?
Agreed.
So I don't know if I can stress this enough, but I wish I were smoking a cheroo or literally anything else.
How much left do you have?
Dude, it's like 2 inches, man. It's not good. I'm not excited. That's about it for that one. There's a huge kind of, it's not a huge, but there's definitely some discussion online about how many points your rating scale is. And so some people believe that an odd number, 5 or 7 or 9 or 11, right? All the odd numbers that we know. I'm kidding. You know, but an odd number system is better than an even number system. And some that believe like a 10-point system is great because it's easy to proxy for like the 100%. So, you know, 9 out of 10 is 90% and so on and so forth. So you can definitely kind of cook your ratings and your reviews based on the numbering system that you choose. And so I know like Amazon does a 5-point system, 5-point system with the stars. But really, it's kind of more than that because they'll do the percentages or the points. So it'll be, you know, it'll show up as like a 3.8 out of 5 or 4.2 out of 5. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing with IMDb and the movie ratings where they do a 10-point scale, but they also do the percentage points. So the average is like a 7.2 out of 10. But based on the system that you choose for your ratings and the total number of choices the raters have can also kind of influence things because I know this is true because for IMDb, it's a 10-point scale. So something I would rate a 7. And then one of my buddies uses Letterboxd and he's like, oh, you got to rate stuff on Letterboxd so I know what you're watching, what you like. I'm like, well, okay. So, but Letterboxd uses a 5-point system. So I'm like, all right, well, so 7 out of 10 would be a 3.5 out of 5. But I feel like 3.5 is too low for this movie. So I'll give it a 4 out of 5. So it kind of influences your ratings based on how many options you have. I don't know if you found the same to be true, Mike.
Oh, sure. And that's why on the show, we have a 5-point scale, but we go above 5 and we go in 0.25 increments. So,
yeah, I think I've relegated myself to it being a 7-point scale because I don't know that we've gone above 7.
No, we haven't. I think the 7 is theoretical.
Yeah, I guess like I would consider our rating system like a seven point system where we try to keep it within the 5 points. And only those that are truly phenomenal get above 5.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So I think that by us telling ourselves, and some of this, like, all of the rating stuff is human nature psychology stuff, basically, where we have a 7-point scale. But if we told ourselves we have a 7-point scale, we could go all the way up to 7. We'd rate things that really aren't a six. But if we tell ourselves we have a 5-point scale, but we have the discretion to go up to 7 in rare occasions, then it's kind of grounding our ratings within a range to where most of the stuff should fall within the 5-point scale, but if it's truly exceptional, it can go beyond that. So we're trying to temper our exuberance for certain cigars, which is trying to manage or keep objective the certain subjective tendencies of human nature.
Right. Yeah.
Which sounds super heady and like cerebral and like, oh yeah, we're the best. But really we had a 5-point scale and then some were like, this is better than a 5. So we kind of just expanded it to a 7. So it wasn't like it was great foresight on our part. This is just how I'm explaining it now or justifying it now. Is we totally just try and keep ourselves to the 5-point scale and hopefully if it's really exceptional. But that's how it's worked out in the past, so there's no reason that it won't hold true. But there's lots of ways to manipulate the ratings, and there are extra ways for certain companies because certain companies will literally try to buy reviews from their consumers and they'll say, hey, you know what? If you give us a 5-star review on something, we'll send you some other stuff of this catalog for free. And then you just go ahead and rate those. And you know what? If you rate those 5, then you get more free stuff coming your way because they just want the good ratings so that they can sell more stuff.
I know that happens. And Amazon has professional reviews, which I don't know how you get on the professional review list or anything like that. But
yeah,
I pretty much discount those because they're all the same. Like, oh, I used it twice and it worked. 4 stars.
Yeah. Yeah, I want the thing to work more than twice. I want the cigar to be better than 1/4 inch.
Yeah, that blew me out of the water. Like, that's crazy.
Right?
Like, that's not fair at all to the cigar.
No.
Especially when you're talking about a really good cigar. Like, the really good cigars separate themselves through smoking, for sure.
Yeah. So each cigar is an experience. It doesn't mean it's a good experience. Last episode, case in point, but Each cigar is an experience, and there have been plenty of times where the experience, you know, and I don't really want to shit all over Gurkha, but, you know, a good number of the Gurkhas are really good all the way through, but an equally number of Gurkhas are good all the way through until the last couple inches, and that's the nature of Gurkhas, I guess, you know, and there are some cigars that we've smoked where the first inch has been god-awful. But then it turned into a really fantastic cigar. And it depends on which quarter of an inch you're smoking. Like, are you smoking like 3/4 of the way through the cigar? Is it only the first bit of the cigar? Like, which part of the cigar are you smoking?
Yeah, I don't know how you could possibly give a reliable rating off of smoking even an inch of a cigar.
No. Well, and that's why, not why, but I mean, that's one of the reasons why, even if we hate the cigar, we kind of smoke it to the end, because is there going to be a flavor change? A lot of times if we hate it at the beginning, we hope to God there is, and sometimes there is, and sometimes there isn't, but if you don't smoke the whole cigar, you're not getting the whole experience, and each cigar is an experience, in my opinion.
I would say that's part of the reason why people enjoy cigars.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, it's not so much about, I mean, some of it is about the nicotine content. I was talking with friend of the show, Dev, the other day, and he went on a vacation and smoked a bunch of cigars. And I was telling him, man, it's been a couple of weeks since we've recorded, and I'm kind of like wanting a cigar. And just life and everything didn't really afford me the, I don't know, 2 hours or hour and a half or whatever it would be to smoke a cigar in leisure. So I hadn't smoked one for a while, but some of it is the nicotine, of course, but each cigar, even like a Dark Shark, where it's like the most mediocre of mediocre things, like it's still an experience or still something you can do and enjoy to an extent, right? Even if you don't enjoy it fully or as much as you enjoy something else. But I mean, that's the point of cigars or anything you do, like a movie. Like, you could go watch a movie, and even if you don't like it, it was still an experience. So,
right. Something like a Dark Shark. I mean, that's a smoke by the fire at night kind of thing for me.
Yeah.
Like, that has a place, though. I don't necessarily want to smoke a $15 cigar on an island full of drunken men in the spring, right? Like,
well, yeah.
That's not the environment for it. So, everything has a time and a place.
Well, yeah, everything has a time and a place, and everything has a cost, and everything has reviews nowadays. I mean, everything has reviews. So, you sell something on Facebook Marketplace, you have reviews suddenly. And if you're a good seller or not, you know, if you buy something on Facebook Marketplace, you have reviews of if you're a good buyer. And everything's so review oriented that in some sense, I mean, there's been some definitely movies for sure where they've been rated like a 5 or a 6 average. And I've rated them like a 7 or an 8. But part of it is, you know, personal preference. And part of it too is you have to take into account how old is the thing being reviewed. Has it stood the test of time or has it not, I guess, right? So there's a lot of different things when you're reading these reviews, and especially with things that are kind of techie, right? So like a submersible LED light. Is this version 1.0 from 5 years ago, or is this like the version 2.0 from 2 months ago? So are you reading the most recent reviews of it, or are you reading like the earlier reviews of it before they fixed the issues that were brought to light in the earlier reviews? You know, I mean, that's kind of the crazy thing is you can list, you can put the same product or the revised or updated product under the same kind of listing and heading on Amazon or on these different sites. But are you looking at the recent reviews, or are you looking at the older reviews? I mean, it's fucking tough out there, man.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And products change under the same listing and they can get worse. I know my wife and I both have tripods for our phones for hiking and things like that. And the older version, which I have, is better than the newer version. Even though the newer version is still good and I would still recommend it. But the one I have folds into the bag easier, so it's easier to throw into a backpack.
Sure.
For an example.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, these companies will update products based on what they think the demand is for. And maybe that's good and maybe it isn't good. I don't know. It's tough to say. But yeah, it's crazy to think that Cigar Aficionado, at least one of their blind taste testers, only smokes 1/4 of an inch of the cigar.
Yeah, that's a useless review, in my opinion.
Pretty much. You know, I know the last cigar we smoked, the Connecticut Torpedo, we weren't thrilled about, but we smoked it the whole way through, and we still weren't thrilled about it.
Right. It could have got better.
But it could have got better. It could have got worse. Mostly stayed the same. But that's the thing is cigars aren't, or a lot of cigars are not a one note and done kind of thing. A lot of them will change throughout the smoke. So only smoking a quarter of an inch is a huge disservice to the cigar.
So Nate, where are you at with your cigar?
I've got a little bit more than an inch, but I really don't want to smoke the rest of it. So I was just going to ask if you had any more thoughts or input or opinions on ratings in general.
No, and I would like to make a note about movie reviews of late, because there's been so much bad media content produced seemingly in the last 5 years that the ratings are becoming extremely unreliable for movies specifically and TV shows. So for something like that that's now becoming more politicized, I don't know if reviews matter as much unless they are in-depth, long-form review that explains the position. So if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, you'll see the professional reviewers giving it a 9 out of 10, and then you'll see 1,000 one-star reviews. And you really need to look into why that is, I guess. There's too much politics in entertainment right now.
Yeah.
For the reviews to be reliable, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah. Especially entertainment.
Right. You almost have to do a long, like, if you really want to be informed about what the content is like, you have to look at a long-form review that explains it. It almost spoils it to an extent.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, if you're one of those people that base your media consumption on reviews and you're not a super fan of whatever it is and you're kind of debating whether or not to go and spend the extra money to see it in the theater versus waiting for it to come on streaming, then you're probably just better off waiting for it to come on streaming and then watching it yourself and making up your own opinion, as long as you subscribe to that streaming service, because likely it'll be cheaper than just going to the theater. Because most movies you can rent for, $3, $4, or $5 on Amazon. If they come on the Amazon platform, you can just rent them for $5, and that's way cheaper than a movie ticket. So you just have to wait a little bit longer, and I think that's kind of where a lot of this stuff gets you, because it's, oh, if you don't see it in theater, you're missing out. Well, for Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan wanted you to see it in IMAX. Well, I don't need to see Cillian Murphy's nose pores in IMAX. It's a courtroom drama. It's not like it's fucking Interstellar or something. It's a courtroom drama. I don't need to see that in IMAX. That's too big a format to watch 12 Angry Men in. I don't need it. So you don't always have to listen to the marketing. You don't always have to listen to the fear of missing out, right? Oh, if I don't see Oppenheimer and IMAX, I'm missing out. No, it's a courtroom drama. You're just missing out on seeing wildly distorted noggins. Like go to the circus and they have the silly mirrors. You can see distorted noggins all day long. You don't need to see Oppenheimer in IMAX. There's not a single reason to see Oppenheimer in IMAX. He shot it in IMAX. Good for him. Fantastic. Stupid. Stupid movie to shoot in IMAX. Just because he's a well-regarded director doesn't mean he knows what he's doing all the time.
No, he's definitely one of the guys who does it because he can, not because it should be done.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why I got in his case all of a sudden. But, I mean, that's the whole thing with reviews, though. Like, modern reviews, like, oh, if you haven't seen Oppenheimer in IMAX, you are missing out. Bullshit you are. Bullshit. So you don't always have to believe him.
Yeah. Sit closer to your TV.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just put mine out because it kind of went out and I'm not thrilled about it. So let's rate this bitch and move on with our lives.
Okay. I will start because mine's extremely jaded.
Yeah.
For those who are listening who want to see what happened, look it up on the Instagram.
Yeah, check us out on the Instagram. Somehow I like it less than the Connecticut. I mean, I got a one. We both gave it a one. I don't know. It wasn't good. I didn't like it. Maybe I was jaded from the Connecticut, I guess. It's not good. I didn't enjoy it. I wasn't enjoying it. There was not one point in the cigar that I enjoyed it. The Connecticut, I don't really know that I enjoyed it either, but it was somehow less gross than this one.
Right. Obviously, my cigar was faulty, so
yeah,
that plays a role. I thought the flavor was better, but also I was sucking so hard on it during the, I don't know, failure that I like have a little tinge in the back of my throat. So it wasn't pleasant at all.
This one has definitely left a more severe aftertaste in my mouth than the Connecticut did. Like I put it out and I'm still tasting it in my mouth. And it's just not a good thing. So do not recommend either of these. I think we've got a couple more of these coming up, but please don't buy these. You can do better. They can do better. We all can do better. Follow us on the Instagram. If you like what we put out on our main podcast, check out our Patreon because we do cutting room floor stuff. We had some stuff from the, the fairy tale episode. We've got some cutting room floor stuff from previous episodes. So if you like that kind of stuff, you can check it out. If you support a certain level, you can find out the next cigars we're going to smoke. So you can get them before the show and smoke them with us. On the show, we give you the cigar and the date that it's smoked. But follow us on the Instagram. We give a lot more pictures than our episode cover. Otherwise, thanks for listening.
Be safe. Have fun.